And a warm welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, where the sun is shining and it's very warm. Very pleasant indeed. How are you this Tuesday, the 16th of March, 2021, or St. Patrick's Day Eve, as we call it back in the old country. St. Patrick's Day Eve. Yes, I'm all right, not too bad, it must be said. Welcome to the programme. Do tweet me at BBG Richie on Twitter.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Yeah, St. Patrick's Day Eve, that's the one.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Lovely jubbly. Nice to be back with you. I'm flying solo today. Around about 90 minutes of news analysis I've got for you. That's my speak for bull spit. That's what it is. Lots of interesting news analysis, I think, coming your way over the next 90 minutes. And when you do drop me a tweet, I will read the tweets out as we do go along. As the time is a minute past five, welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. I'm not well in myself, really. Last couple of days, I'm not well. I've managed to negotiate this winter, just gone. Can I say just gone? It isn't spring yet, is it? Has spring sprung yet? Maybe, no. Has it? I don't know. But I've managed to negotiate it without feeling unwell. I've had a good run this winter. So I have. But last few days have not been great. It's almost like something is trying to get into me system, but just can't quite make it. I put that down to saying the training, the prayers and the vitamins. Saying me prayers, training and eating my vitamins. That's what got me through those matches with King Kong Bundy and Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man. And it's what got me through this winter, I think. Loads of zinc and vitamin D3, vitamin D regular and vitamin C. But I've not been great the last couple of days. And yesterday I couldn't face it. I was up at 5:30 yesterday. Went out and did me a bit of business, came back in. I have to piss outside these days. No, I brought the dog out for her little bit of business. And went for a walk and came back and just didn't feel good. And I couldn't face producing the radio show. So I contented myself with just sitting down and working on the website and writing articles. So I didn't have so much of a day off, really. But I just couldn't face the old radio show. But I've been good this winter. And maybe I need it. Maybe I'm entitled to a little bit of a respite as we passed the 1,500 show mark last week in 6.5 years, which I'm very proud of, by the way. But anyway, pride comes before a fall. Hi to Chris, hi to Charlotte, hi to H-U, as in Hugh or who, how you doing? Hi to Bill, how you doing, Bill? Charlie Stevenson, Fabrizio. Hi to Carolyn, how you doing, Carolyn? Who wants a shout out and wants me to mention Marco as well. Just done it. I'm not doing too bad. Let's have a look at what's happening then. It is St. Patrick's Day in the old country tomorrow. The Irish are being told to stay at home. They're being told not to even think, not to even consider getting a bag of cans or a carryout and meeting up with their pals. Don't do it. Says who? Says Ireland's deputy chief medical officer, a guy called Dr. Ronan Glynn. I won't bring you the audio. The guy's got a really annoying voice. I know. Insert your own joke right there. I've got thick skin. I can take it. But he's telling people, listen, don't go out. And it's just maddening to me that today there are 360 people in Irish hospitals allegedly suffering with the virus. Allegedly. 85 of them in intensive care. Now, according to the Irish government, there are 4.9 million people living in God's country, in the land of shamrocks and leprechauns and banshees. 4.9 million people, 360 in hospital, 85 apparently serious enough to be in an ICU unit. Nobody died yesterday of coronavirus and nobody died the day before. But no easing of lockdown in Ireland. No, lockdown full speed ahead. Keep it going there, Patsy, seems to be the attitude of the Irish government. It's dreadful, isn't it? Glynn did say last night, the Irish Deputy Chief Medical Officer, that they do expect protests in Dublin and elsewhere tomorrow on Paddy's Day. Okay, so they do expect protests, and the police are expected to be out in force tomorrow in Ireland dealing with anti-lockdown protesters. By the way, if you do have something planned, now's the time to send me a tweet and let me know what it is if you want me to give it a shout out, because I do have some listeners in the old country. I have more than one or two. So let me know if you've got something planned for tomorrow and I'll tell the Gardaí. I'll get on to the Gardaí. That's what I'll do. What am I? I'm a narc. I'm the narc of the Trouser Industrial Complex. I'm the narc. Tell me about your protest tomorrow and I'll ring the Gardaí. Of course I won't. Greg's Bakery, first loss in 36 years, announced today. Greg's, where you get your sausage rolls and pasties with 1.5 million calories in every bite. Thornton's, the chocolate maker, closing all of its high street stores. Job losses everywhere. Nobody gives a shite, though. Nobody gives a shite. Not on the mainstream media, anyway. Okay, hundreds and thousands of people learn every single day that they won't have a job to go back to and they won't have anything else to do in place of it. Ah, but sure, look, you know, let's just keep the lockdown going there, lads. And I was thinking about this today. One of the problems, I don't even think we have gotten into this in terms of me and you. One of the big problems that is never mentioned when the subject of the disappearing high street comes up, we never mention, is the role, the importance of the role played by shops and small businesses in providing part-time work, obviously vital for unskilled workers. We've gotten into that 1 million times. But we never talk about the value of the teenager getting his or her first job. We never talk about that. That's a very valuable thing growing up, isn't it? When you get your first job, when you're 15 or 16. You know, how much you learn from that experience. Mine was working in a supermarket, sweeping floors and stacking shelves and carrying stuff to cars. To cars, boy. That's what I used to do. Carry stuff to cars for people who are too lazy to carry it themselves. But the importance of the skills you learn as a young man or woman, you know, teamwork, getting on with people, respect, tolerance, confidence. The confidence it gives you when you bring home a few bob to your mammy when you're 15 or 16. The pride in that. I think it's invaluable. And nobody's mentioned this, you know. What was your first gig? Do tweet me, BBG Richie. BB. I'm turning into Jeremy Vine today. It's going to be a Jeremy Vine type show. It's going to be semi-mainstream. What was your first gig? Let me know what you did. I worked in the house and home department store. Quinsworth, Liz Duggan, Waterford, Morris Pratt, Mr. Morris Pratt on the telly in Ireland. And with me, Blue Gansey boy. I had a Blue Gansey. A Gansey, of course, is a jumper. I had a blue jumper and I had a name tag on. Richard Allen. They wouldn't give me Richie, the bastards. I had to say Richard. I had to be all prim and proper. And a black pair of briefs, black trousers, walking around with a broom, pushing it around, looking out for the manager, who was a guy called Jim Farnham. He used to look around corners for him. Whenever I saw him, I just moved the brush basically in front of me and act like I was doing stuff. And for that, I was given the grand sum of £1.80 an hour. And I was delighted with it. So I was. I used to love messing around on the in-store tannoy system. Loved it. Screwing around. What else is new today? We'll come back to this in a minute. Plainclothes policemen and women could patrol bars and nightclubs. It's a possibility to protect women from predatory offenders. Jesus, how can you picture the scene, can you? You sidle, there's a word we don't hear too often. You sidle up to a woman or a man or a non-binary that you find attractive. You get the courage up and you say, "Can I buy you a drink, love?" Step away from the woman. Put your drink down slowly. Eh? What the feck, eh? We'll come back to that in a few minutes' time. Time is 5:09. The Richie Allen Radio Show with you today. Flying solo. Here's a tune. When we come back, it's hard news. It's hard news on the Richie Allen Radio Show with me, the BBG, live from Salford. Bob Seger opening the show. Thanks for the tweets. I see a few of them already. I'll read more of them when I come back. Roll me away, Bejesus.
Took a look down a
Bob Seger, Roll Me Away on the Richie Allen Radio Show from the album The Distance. I love Bob Seger. Right, you've come through loud and clear there on the old First Jobs there. Before we get to the First Jobs, Fran says, Richie, going to Dublin from Galway myself tomorrow. The Garda are trying to frighten people off. Hopefully there will be good numbers for the day that's in it. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Richie. That's Bernard. And many happy returns, Bernard. Cheers for that, mate. Dora, how you doing, Dora? Richie, my first job was in a greengrocer's across the street. I got fired, she says, because I couldn't get the hang of the scales. So if somebody wanted a half a pound of carrots, they probably got 2 pounds. The customers loved me, says Dora. Worked in Woolies too, feel better. Thanks, Dora. I feel all right, you know. I don't know. It could be a seasonal thing. I don't know. Darren was a paper boy from 12 to 14, then stacked shelves at a small hardware shop at 15. Loved the paper round in Hammerwich in Staffordshire, middle of nowhere, rural. Winter views were beautiful. Norman was the boss. He was a legend. Thanks, Darren. Proly used to troll the golf courses, collecting lost balls, then head up to the clubhouse and quietly sell them. Well done, son. I knew some lads who did that. I knew some people who did that in Spain in my time there. Tracy got a Saturday job in her final year of high school at a hairdresser's. Lessons learned were great. She learned communication, teamwork and watching the skills. Full day's work for a fiver back in the 1980s, says Tracy. Good on you, Tracy. Thanks so much for that. William's first gig was a milk round in Creef. 12 quid a week, aged 13. Nothing like a bit of exploitation there. Bit of child labour. You can't beat it, can you? Charlotte's first job was at the Manor Barn Pub in Burnley. Pot washing for the whole shift. Wrinkled fingers, the job lot. Chef kept shouting at me to say I wasn't fast enough, so I didn't last very long, says Charlotte. Buster used to sell tatties around the doors of houses, hanging off the back doors of the tatty van. At 14, those were the days, mate, he says. Lovely. Tatties are potatoes, by the way. Paula was a Saturday girl at Top Travel, a travel agency. I was a Saturday girl, she said, putting the brochures out, aged 14. Damn the paper cuts off of the brochures, she says. Yeah, paper cuts, yeah. Paper cuts are not good. I'm going to do two more. Bill says he was a nipper on a building site about 15 years old, just running around fetching stuff, making the tea, going to the chippy for the workers' lunches. All the guys gave me a fiver each at the end of the week. I was rich beyond belief, says Bill. And the blue ribbon goes to Elizabeth first. How you doing, Elizabeth? I can't believe I'm reading this one out. Richie, I injected elm trees against Dutch elm disease in the United States. I had my pesticide license aged 16. Nothing beats that. One more. Kelsey, or Kelsang, says, Richie, I was a farm boy. No, I'm reading that all wrong. Thanks for the tweets. Let's get straight into the news. Let's do it. The AstraZeneca vaccine. Blood clots. Huge story. The coverage has been very predictable. A dozen countries or thereabouts have suspended using the AstraZeneca Oxford coronavirus vaccine by now. Why? Because of fears it causes blood clotting and that deaths may have occurred as a result. Right? Right. Let's have a listen around the BBC. How is it being covered? Here's Politics Live today. Joe Coburn presenting BBC Two. Have a listen.
Let's start with one of the stories in the headlines that more countries are pausing their rollout of the AstraZeneca vaccine. Let's show you a couple of the front pages. The Daily Mail headlines it like this. Reckless EU snubs UK jab. And this is how the Financial Times sees it. AstraZeneca jab rollout paused in Europe over blood clot fears. Before we go to our panel, I'd like to welcome Dr. Michael Head. He is the Senior Global Research Fellow at the University of Southampton. Welcome to the programme. Dr. Head, you'll know people, millions of them, have had this vaccine. Many more are about to. Is there any cause for concern?
Michael Head, Southampton. Is there any cause for concern, lad?
Good afternoon. I can't see any obvious cause for concern with this. What we have seen is a possible small signal where there's been an increased number of blood clots soon after vaccination. In Germany, the data suggested it's slightly above what you would expect to see normally anyway across a population, but not massively elevated. So I'm quite curious as to why countries have chosen to pause their vaccination campaigns based on that possible small signal. It's right that regulators investigate it, but pausing a vaccine rollout during a pandemic seems to be a bit strange at this point in time.
Well, and as you said...
Listen to her question now.
You said you'd like to know why they've done it, which is the question I'm sure is being posed. We can show a map of the number of countries that have paused administering the AstraZeneca vaccine. And it is quite a large number and a growing number, it seems, just at the moment. And yet it flies in the face of regulators here and across Europe and real world evidence. Do you have any idea why that might be?
Yeah, that's a shocker right there. She should have asked him or put to him that these European countries feel that they've got a good reason for suspending the jab. They've got their own experts, so why are they wrong? Surely they are right to proceed carefully. That is what she should have said to him. But this is the BBC. She's with him all the way. This is not an interview or anything like it.
No, I am. I said yesterday that I was baffled as to why countries have paused, and I remain baffled right now. As you say, we will hear more later today from the EMA, the European regulators, and also the World Health Organization. But here in the UK, we've administered 10 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine, and there's been no noted signal. And this has been investigated, of course. So this slightly elevated possible risk from blood clots, going from about 5 per million population to about 7, if you compare that with the chances of dying in the UK from COVID-19 over the last year, that's about 2,000 deaths per million. So the kind of the risk-reward ratio here still seems to be overwhelmingly in favour of keeping the vaccines going. So yeah, I'm still unsure as to why some countries have paused it at this point.
All right, thank you very much. Bim, are you worried at all about the impact it might have on take-up of the vaccine here?
No, she said Bim, right? This is Bim Afolani. He's a Conservative MP. Again, this is dreadful stuff. She hasn't asked him, are you not worried as a Conservative MP that this vaccine might be causing harm and that you will be hammered for not following the lead of Denmark and the Netherlands and Ireland in suspending it? That's her obvious question. It's the natural one. Instead, she asks him, is he worried about the uptake? That it's dreadful, right? Dreadful stuff. Dreadful stuff. You, any day one presenter, first day on the job, would say to him, nothing about uptake. Your only question there is, you could look, this could be very bad for your government if this vaccine is doing damage and you haven't suspended it. But she asks him, is he concerned that people won't take it? What's his answer? Tory MP Bim Afolani.
In here.
Go on, Bim.
Well, I'm concerned about it because I don't want one person watching this or having read the newspapers this morning to think that they don't want to take the vaccine that we know is safe. As Dr. Head explained, we have real world evidence of the safety of this vaccine, you know, of 10 million doses in this country over several weeks. And frankly, I think the European Union's whole attitude to the vaccination program, because of Britain's decision to pursue an independent vessel strategy, for me seems has been very odd for many weeks. And this is the latest in a series of quite odd decisions from many countries in the European Union.
Yes, quite a number of Conservative MPs today were alleging that this is just politicking, that the European Union is so pissed off that the UK decided to leave and go it alone, that it is dissing the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. Now, I have less time for the European Union than any man or woman alive, but this is horse manure. Germany, the Netherlands, Italy and France have not suspended this vaccine just to put the wind up the UK government. They've obviously suspended it because they see something in it that they don't like, and they're covering their arses. Now, that's my guess. It doesn't mean I'm right. That's my guess on this story. As I said, a lot of Conservative commentators today saying this is just Brussels with the hump, with the ump, basically, over Brexit. It was just as bad on the BBC News at 1, on the BBC News channel, and on BBC One, BBC News at 1. Yeah. Okay, Richie. Tom Chivers was on. Don't ask me why Tom Chivers was on. He's the science editor for Unheard. Unheard, right? Unheard. You'll find Unheard online. He's a writer. He's no scientist. But they brought him on anyway. What does Tom think about all of these countries suspending the AstraZeneca jab? Tom Chivers.
I honestly can understand that there's a sort of, people get nervous about new things. I mean, people get nervous about things that are actually safer than the alternatives. I mean, you know, I think of like nuclear power or genetically modified organisms and these things where...
Yeah, he really did say that. He said that people get nervous about things that are better than the alternative. And he mentions nuclear power, which could kill every last MF one of us, and GM organisms. Wow. What else does he say?
People get this sort of panic of the new thing, but in this case...
of the new thing.
I think it's really bad. I mean, even if it turns out, which I, you know, we can't rule out, even if it does turn out that there is a slightly raised risk of blood clotting caused by this vaccine, the odds are... Well, it's not even the odds are, it is absolutely, definitely much lower than the risk of clotting caused by COVID itself, which, you know, not only causes clotting, it causes many other risks and kills and main hurts people through in lots of different ways. So,
Of course, the presenter should interject there and say, how do you know, Tom? How do you know that clotting as a result of the virus is more likely than clotting from the vaccine? Based on what, Tom? How do you know, son? What do you know that the scientists in Europe don't? But no, you can say whatever you like on the BBC these days and not expect to be challenged. He goes on, Tom Chivers.
The sort of cost-benefits analysis, even if there is this slight raised risk, is enormous. I mean, it's like, you know, we put up with small risks from things in order to prevent larger risks, and that's the idea of the vaccine. And it is not...
Yeah. Getting a blood clot that goes to your brain or goes to your heart isn't a small risk for the greater good. It's something that could kill you. Kill you stone dead, brown bread. It's not a small risk. Guys like him are guys who tell you to do the lottery. Guys like him, it's to do the lottery. Yeah, but they've got little or no chance of winning it. Do it anyway. Tens and tens of millions to one, but you know you've got a chance. But then he'll tell you you don't have any chance of getting a blood clot. Arseholes like him will say, yeah, go on, have a punt on the Euro Millions. I've got no chance of winning, but do it anyway, you've got a chance. But apparently you don't have any chance of getting a blood clot from an AstraZeneca vaccine. Crazy stuff.
As though we can simply say, okay, well, it's fine, we'll just delay it a little bit while we check things out. Every day that you delay vaccinating people is a day that they could catch COVID and a day in which they could therefore die. I mean, I saw an analysis suggesting that every 100,000 people you vaccinate a day earlier saves 15 lives. And if, you know, if this means...
Again, the presenter should jump in and say, can you please tell me which survey you're referring to, Tom, that says that every person you vaccinate, you save 15 lives? Where did you get that from, Tom? Eh? Madness. And this nonsense of each day that you don't vaccinate yourself is a day that you might get coronavirus and die. But 99.7% of people who get coronavirus survive it. You've got more chance of being hit on the head from a falling giraffe, which is wrestling with a gorilla in midair, than you have of dying from coronavirus. But again, he's on the BBC. God, no, they're not challenging any of this stuff.
If this means that a million people get their... their vaccine a week late, that'll be about 1,000 or so people die who otherwise have had to. So this is, I mean, this is really, it seems a really high risk and unwise strategy on my part. And I mean, there's another thing to worth be thinking about, that I've seen people talking about sort of clusters of these events, you know, around I think in Germany and Norway, people saying there's this particular bat, there's a cluster of these things. And maybe that's true, although it still seems extremely likely that it's just, you know, that it's just the background rate. But it's also possible that it's just, this is just a random cluster. They're looking at blood clotting, but they haven't looked at, you know, it could have been, there are lots of things that can go wrong with people's bodies. And it could just be, you know, we could be talking about heart failure or epilepsy or fainting. One of these things could have happened in a random bunch somewhere.
Yeah, we could be talking about heart failure or epilepsy. What a coincidence that is, eh? They got their AstraZeneca vaccine and then they just died of heart failure naturally. It had nothing to do with the vaccine. Or they got epilepsy or had a brain hemorrhage and dropped dead, but it has nothing to do with the vaccine. Incidentally, marvellous Marvin Hagler's widow is claiming, and she's claiming very loudly, that the vaccine had nothing to do with his death. That's problematic because his son is saying something entirely differently. Or at least he was over the weekend. Anyway, former world middleweight champion Marvin Hagler died on Saturday, suddenly. And Thomas Hitman Hearns, great, great fighter, went online and said he was in hospital while he was still alive, battling the effects of the vaccine. What's going on? His son told TMZ that he was rushed to hospital where he died, but his mum says no, he died at home. What's going on? I don't know. I don't know. 29 minutes past five. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show live from Salford. How you doing? The BBG, not the BBC. And that's what you got all day long on UK media. Experts in inverted commas came on telly and radio and said, well, what do you know? There's nothing to see here. Please disperse. Not a single interviewer covered his arse or her arse by saying, well, you'd better be right, right? Right, you'd better be right about this, right? Because you're pretty blasé about people's health coming on here, criticising European countries for suspending this vaccine and saying that it's much ado about nothing. You'd better be right, hadn't you, Bill? Hadn't you, Mary? Because there are people watching this programme who might go and get the effing thing and it might kill them. Now, the European Medicine Agency, the EMA, will report on its own investigation into the AstraZeneca jab this coming Thursday. Speaking today, here's Eimear Cook, the chief executive of the EMA. Straight after her, you will hear Adam Parsons from Sky News. But first, EMA chief exec Eimear Cook.
At present, there is no indication that vaccination has caused these conditions. They have not come up in the clinical trials and they're not listed as known or expected side events with this vaccine. The number of thromboembolic events overall in the vaccinated people seems not to be higher than that seen in the general population.
You know what pisses me off about that, Eimear Cook? She was sitting in front of reporters. Not one of them said to her, as I would have said, hey Eimear, why on Friday did your organisation, the EMA, insist that severe allergic reactions be added to the list of possible side effects from the AstraZeneca vax? Why did you do that on Friday last? Not one journalist had the balls to ask her as she sat there today and said, we don't see any link whatsoever between the AZ jab and blood clots or anything else. On Friday, only 4 days ago, the Baxters insisted that anaphylaxis, hypersensitivity and other severe allergic reactions should be added to the possible list of side effects. Wow. And I reported about, I reported on this even on my website, richieallen.co.uk, on Friday. This is astonishing ineptitude by the media. Jesus, you're sitting there. Go on, do your job. Just ask her, you know? Anyway, we're going to digest all of that. And when we come back from this tune, we're going to hear what they do not want you to hear about the AstraZeneca vaccine. You do not want to miss what's coming next. Taking us there, George Ezra. I know he said Evra. Ezra.
That's running through your bloody veins. You know it's life heading your way.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Alrighty.
This is the Richie Allen Show, the most listened to independent news radio show in Europe.
Sure is. Welcome back to it. Let's get into some serious stuff now. That which they don't want you to hear. Very important this now. Okie doke, Eamon. Sacharit Bhakti is a renowned epidemiologist and microbiologist. You might know that by now. He studied at the universities of Bonn, Gießen, Mainz. Let's do that again. He studied at the universities of Bonn, Gießen, Mainz, Copenhagen, and at the Max Planck Institute of Immunobiology and Epigenetics in Freiburg. Why do I say all of that? Well, because Sacharit Bhakti has been widely regarded as Germany's leading microbiologist. He's a Thai German gentleman, an expert. He was heralded until last year, that is, when he started asking questions about lockdowns and expressing concerns that mRNA vaccines are dangerous. This guy was a go-to scientist by the media, for the media, of the media. He was on with me last year. Not long after that, it had nothing to do with me now, but not long after that, his YouTube channel was deleted. Imagine. Imagine you've got more letters after your name than the Greek and Roman and phonetic alphabets combined, and they delete your YouTube channel. I want you to listen carefully to this. This was recorded a week ago. A week ago. He tells us here, does this expert, Sacharit Bhakti, that he has written to the European Medicines Agency. Written to them. He wrote to them on March 1st. This was recorded a week ago, so this was recorded later. He wrote to them, then a week later he made this video. Here, he has a stark warning about these vaccines. Everybody in the world needs to hear it, Sacharit Bhakti.
The corona crisis has now advanced to a stage that we fear for you, and in particular for our elderly citizens and our children. Our premonition relates to the gene-based vaccines that are in this very moment being plunged into the bodies of countless people who can have no inkling of the potential dangers they face. Hardly anyone realizes that myriad copies of a virus gene will pervade your body and enter cells that the virus normally would not reach. Few realize that this could spark auto-attack events because the immune system is misled into believing that the virus is there to be fought. Few know that such genetically designed vaccines have never been approved for use in humans. Few know that COVID vaccines have also only been given conditional approval for emergency use. In the next 2 years, it will be reviewed whether their benefits really outweigh their risks. Every person who gets vaccinated now is actually part of this huge experiment. Of course, without any liability, because with vaccination under emergency rules, the manufacturers make no guarantees whatsoever in case of serious reactions or even in case of death. They are free from any liability.
That is true. He believes every word of that, as does Professor Dolores Cahill and others, that these treatments, which are not vaccines, will cause pathogenic priming in the body, causing the immune system to attack itself with horrific consequences. And he's explained it. And he believes this to be true. He's not a conspiracy theorist. This is a world-renowned epidemiologist and microbiologist. And as he said at the end there, the companies in question have been given immunity by our governments from prosecution our government bears the liability, right? Okay. Here's a bit more from the same video. Sacharit Bhakti.
We staunchly advocate the use of safe and efficacious vaccines in principle. We maintain that the safety and efficacy of the COVID vaccines have, however, not been proven. And we demand that these basic issues be reconsidered before the vaccination program is allowed to continue its course. Because we note that a wide range of adverse effects is being reported following vaccination of previously healthy younger individuals. Moreover, reports keep raining in from around the world that waves of deaths in care homes follow in the immediate wake of vaccination of the residents. While a certain number of adverse events must be expected simply due to coincidence, the abundance of such reports in this case is deeply worrying. We are concerned that there has been and is inadequate scrutiny of the possible causes of illness or death under these circumstances. In fact, anyone with a medical education who has also studied the composition and action mechanism of the vaccines must realize that there's every reason to expect grave side effects. Once the vaccines enter the bloodstream, which they will remain entrapped there and will enter the cells that line the blood vessels and induce these to produce the virus protein. Two dangerous things must then be expected to happen. Firstly, many copies of the virus spike will appear on the cell surface. These may directly bind and activate blood platelets, which will trigger blood clotting. Secondly, the cells producing the spike protein may be attacked by our own immune system because the immune system is trained to recognize and destroy cells that produce the virus. Damage to the blood vessel lining must be expected to cause the blood to clot as well. The effect is likely magnified in individuals receiving their second vaccinations, as well as in patients who have been infected with any coronavirus shortly before or after vaccination. This may well have contributed to the observed clusters of deaths in senior homes. And there have been case reports of severe illness and deaths occurring in young and middle-aged persons because of profound disturbances in blood clotting.
So he's explained the blood clotting. It's interesting to me to note today that a couple of commentators mentioned that we shouldn't be too worried about the AstraZeneca vaccine causing blood clots in some people because the Pfizer vaccine also has shown in very small quantities to cause blood clots in people as well. So he's explaining, and he has explained as well as he can there for a layperson like me, and maybe you, but I'll only speak for myself, how this works and how it could cause blood clots in the body, the heart and the brain, right? He goes on. You're listening to Sacharit Bhakti, epidemiologist, virologist, microbiologist, renowned scientist from Thailand and Germany.
Triggering clot formation in your vessels is always potentially life-threatening. If clots form at vulnerable sites in brain, spinal cord, and heart, interruption of blood flow may have irreversible and even fatal effects. It was for this reason that we wrote 1 week ago, entirely privately, to the EMA, alerting them to our concerns and requesting evidence that these possible dangerous effects of the vaccines had been excluded in preclinical studies prior to their approval. However, we have received no reply from the EMA, and we are thus forced to believe that the potential dangers of the vaccines had never been excluded. We now feel morally obliged to turn our private letter into a public one, and we call on you to join us in our quest to bring transparency to this grave and pressing issue.
They're ignoring the letter that he and others sent to them, the EMA, and he winds up by saying this.
Let us begin together with a challenge to the medical regulators to release the bald figures of the numbers of people who have died within 28 days of receiving a COVID-19 vaccine. We, the people, have a legal and ethical right to be informed about the risks of any medical intervention, including risks that result from missing evidence, and a right not to be experimented upon. It is high time for all of us to assert these rights for the sake of our children and the generations to come.
So, Jared Bakdi there. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is 14 minutes to 6 o'clock. More music, this time, Joan Jett. Joan Jett and the Blackhearts there. And I love rock and roll. Don't ask me to remember the year. God. No, I won't even hazard a guess. There was a time when that stuff tripped off the tongue. I don't mind telling you, but I can't think off the top of my head. William says, what are your thoughts on the weekend's marches, Richie? I say to people, you have a right, a human right, to go where you want to go. You have a right, a God-given right, if there is a God, to leave your house and to assemble peacefully. Now, the policing and crime bill, I could have gotten into that today and I could have waxed lyrical about it. I don't mean waxed lyrical about it. You don't give a shite what I have to say. Doesn't matter what my opinion is. It only matters what your opinion is. But, you know, this policing and crime bill, which is being debated in Westminster as we speak, which will, if passed, give the police incredible powers when it comes to preventing people from peacefully assembling or going about their business. William, listen, protest by all means. The thing I've said 1,000 times over the years, I wish that when 1 million people marched in London against Tony Blair bombing the bejesus out of Iraq and Afghanistan, knowing that the UK was going to wage war on a country that never threatened nor impositioned the United Kingdom in its history, 1 million people went to London. God damn it, that was impressive. My only regret, and this is the sort of thing that might get you into trouble, and by you I mean me, because I'm not supposed to say this sort of thing, but I mean it, so I'll say it anyway. Biggest problem I have is that people go home. Don't go home. March on Downing Street. March on Westminster. March on Buckingham Palace. And peacefully demand that those people pack a suitcase and feck off. And feck off forever. Because we don't need you. It's like the Occupy thing. Ah, oh, Richie, back in the day I used to get stick for criticising the Occupy movement after the thing had all blown over. And I said, why did they go home? Why didn't people join them in their droves? And why didn't other people feed them and water them? Eh? This is my only problem with protest. It's the same problem I've had for years with turning up to a local hall or turning up to a hotel and meeting a number of truthers for the weekend who might impart some truth and wisdom. They might very well do. But at the very end of it, you tend to go home with a goodie bag and some nice photographs and everything stays the same. That's the only thing I've ever said about protest. But you have a God-given right to leave your home. You have a God-given fucking right to open your business. You have a God-given right to invite your neighbours around for a drink. Nobody has authority over you. So goddamn right tomorrow on St. Patrick's Day, if in Glasgow or Edinburgh or Belfast or Dublin or Cork or Galway, you want to go out and make your voice heard, you have the right to do that and you should do it. 100%. Absolutely right. This policing and crime bill is sinister in the extreme, isn't it? But what are you going to do, you know? The Labour Party says, oh, we can't support it. I mean, it makes me laugh, these women. Here's the misogyny now. Misogynistic Monday. I wasn't here yesterday, so we've carried it over. But here's the thing. All of these people complaining about the police being heavy-handed at the vigil for Sarah Everard. As the journalist Isabel Oakeshott said today on Twitter, and I echo what she said today, where the fuck were these people last year when the government and the police was telling people they'd be arrested if they opened their business? That they'd be arrested if they were outdoors for no good reason. Where was the uproar then? There was none. Apart from the independent media, apart from you and me, and a few others. But now, oh, it's terrible, the police, all the heavy-handedness and all the rest of it. Crazy. We'll talk about that now. A number of you, by the way, have sent me messages about your first jobs. I have tweeted a link out already to where you can watch Sacharit Bhakti. I grabbed the audio from it because I'm a radio show and played it. But I've put the link on Twitter, at BBG Richie on Twitter. Okay? Okay. Alrighty. Let's move on. And talk about some of the madness, police brutality and all of that. Right. Scroll on down. Yeah. Now, the year to March 2020. So that would be April 1st, 2019 to March 31st, 2020. 207 women were murdered in the UK. 207. Okay. Now, the previous year, it was 241. So crimes, the most, I suppose, well, the most final crime, the most awful of crimes, no coming back from it, murder. 207, year ending March 2020, 241 the previous year. So you can't say, oh, less women were killed because of lockdown. No. This is year ending March 2020. So murder against women had dropped by 34 murders on the previous year. Why the hysteria about what happened to Sarah Everard? As dreadful as it is, it's horrendous to me, and it should be to anybody. Somebody's out and about, they get kidnapped and murdered. What's going on? Calls for curfews for men, right? Some of those calls might have been tongue-in-cheek, I'm sure they were. Calls to start teaching young boys at school. Teach them what, exactly? Teach them what? That they shouldn't kill women? Right? What happened to Sarah Everard is an anomaly. It's incredibly rare for a woman to be abducted and murdered in this country. And 207 murders of women in a population approaching 60 million is nothing to be getting your knickers in a twist about. It's not good. Don't get me wrong. You'd have to see the circumstances. I'm not saying now that murder is justified. Of course it isn't in any circumstance. But what were the circumstances? You know? But that isn't stopping the UK's broadcasters and the politicians demanding that something needs to be done to protect women. But when they're asked what, they can't say. Make misogyny a hate crime. Make a law. Get it on the statute books. Mad stuff. A man has been charged with the murder of Sarah Everard. His name is Wayne Cousins. He's been charged. He's innocent until proven guilty. He was an armed police officer. Worked in the diplomatic service, apparently. Today, on television, and particularly in the press, lots of opinion pieces full of diatribe about women walking down the streets and sexual harassment, and how it's unsafe for women on the streets of the UK in 2021. Is it really? Is that the truth? Am I missing something here? Because it wouldn't be the first time now that I've missed something. I'm no expert on anything. Obviously. I've got a big gob on me. And I get it wrong plenty of times. So maybe I'm wrong. But I don't know. The statistics don't bear it out. That the streets are dangerous for women. I'll give you a laugh because you might need a laugh this Tuesday. James O'Brien, LBC Radio, as he so often does, saw the opportunity for a bit of virtue signalling. He had a proper shot at the title today. He went for the world title, which has been held by Owen Jones for many years, little twerp. But O'Brien gave it a good old try today, speaking about women. James O'Brien. This is Alan. This is exactly what Steve Coogan was doing with Alan Partridge.
I mean, it's fairly obvious what would make things better, isn't it? I mean, there is systemic and then there is operational. So the systemic change, which we may get onto a little later in the programme, does begin in the classroom. I mean, it begins at birth, practically. And I think men have to do quite a lot of heavy lifting. We have to look very, very hard at our own opinions. It's always tempting on a day like today. So I caught myself doing it earlier, didn't I? And hey, blimey, I'm sure that I transgress daily in the fundamental field of equality. Absolutely sure of it. You know, I went to an all-boys school. I didn't share a classroom with a girl after the age of six. And it must have influenced me in weird ways that I've spent the rest of my life either suffering from or trying to fix or not even noticing. I'm under no illusions about that whatsoever. I hope I get better every time.
He hopes he gets better.
Every time. I think for once it is relevant that I'm the only bloke in my house. I think that is relevant. It makes me look at the world through very different eyes than perhaps I would have done if I'd pursued a bachelor existence or ended up being the father of several boys.
Yeah. James O'Brien is the sort of guy that bottles his own farts, right? It gets worse, this, by the way. You think that's bad enough.
But I have got one particular... What do you call
it? Oh, he's full of angst here. He doesn't know if he wants to tell us this story.
I've got a mate and I'm still mates with him. And he went through a period of talking about women with other friends in the most vile and misogynistic of ways. I've told you about this before. He would refer, in the context of discussing sexual conquests, he would refer to smashing it.
Oh, Jesus. He would refer to smashing it when speaking of sexual conquests. And you're his friend, James?
And, you know, what do you do? Every man has been in a conversation like that.
I haven't. I risk sounding like a bigger virtue signaller than James O'Brien, but none of my mates have ever talked about smashing women. Ever.
I felt, perhaps naively, that my friend was being led astray by someone else. So I told him I couldn't spend time with him when the other bloke was there. But I...
Ah, you thought that it was an undue influence on your friend, a third party, and you said to your friend, I can't be around you if Billy is there, because Billy says unthinkable things about women. Ah, right.
But I don't know. Maybe I was giving him a bit of a free pass on it. And I said, yeah, if he's in the flat, I'm not coming over.
If he's in the flat, I'm not coming over.
I just find it really gross and upsetting.
What a lying bastard.
And it's not because I'm a father of daughters. What I said to him, I said, I just can't help imagining how you would feel if someone spoke about your mum.
Bottles his own farts, remember?
About your mum like that, mate. And I know you're going to laugh at me, and I know it's socially embarrassing to be the bloke who objects to the way other men talk about women. And that has to be part...
It's pure Partridge, isn't it?
Part of it. Tiny little baby steps like that, just telling men when women aren't around.
Ah.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I hate this stuff. I really, really hate it because...
You love it.
Because when the lid gets blown off by an appalling event, what you see inside is unbelievable in both scale and content.
In both scale and content. I have a friend, and he's spoken about women in the most obscene and the most vile ways, says James. Terrible. And I've told him I don't like it. And I thought it was his other friend that was influencing him, and I said, I'm not coming over to the flat if he's there, said James O'Brien. It's all vile and horrible. We've got to start at birth, in dealing with this stuff. This is horse shit, isn't it? And I've had some Jack the Lad mates, you know? And would I say now that my mates haven't been salacious in describing women that they find attractive? No, I'd be a liar if I said no, of course. Of course we, when we're together and we've had a jar or a sherbet or two, you know, you might refer to a woman in a way that you wouldn't if she was standing alongside you. But nobody's ever spoken about smashing women or any of that nonsense, not alongside me. But I'm not going to do with James O'Brien. If one of my mates said that, I'm not going to tell him don't say that again. I'm not. Why not? Because I'm not. I'm pretty sure that none of my mates are rapists or kidnappers. Right? Right. Unbelievable. The hysteria around this today. You have Jess Phillips from Yardley in Birmingham, the Labour MP, crying. Well, not quite crying. She read out the names of every woman who was killed by violence, well, by violence, obviously, in the UK, in Parliament, in a wonderful moment of virtue signalling last week. Something has to be done, something has to be done. But what, though? What needs to be done? We don't have any higher rates of murder or sexual assault against women in the UK than in other countries. Now, where there might be a problem, there might very well be a problem, is in prosecution or prosecuting men who may have committed crimes against women, sexual crimes against women, or violence against women. There might very well be a problem. I don't think the statistics make very good reading for the Director of Public Prosecutions in this country. And I believe women. Some of the women I've heard and seen, and I've been doing mid-morning radio on commercial radio for years and years and years. And you hear all the time about women who were sexually assaulted and then go and report it and end up getting talked out of proceeding. Or the case is dropped for reasons that are never properly communicated to the victim, leaving her, of course, in a desperate state. Yes, I think there might very well be problems there. No doubt in my mind that might be the case. But this hysteria around women and what are we going to do? How are we going to get men to take responsibility for the actions of other men? Well, how can we? I don't know any kidnappers or any rapists even. You know, or men who stalk women. We're told that stalking is an epidemic at the moment. But nobody has challenged any of this to say, well, give us an example. I know the Daily Mail ran a story the other day where a woman actually filmed a guy who was following her on the street and saying nasty things to her. But listen, if I'm wrong about this stuff, do tweet me if you're a woman and you do happen to navigate the streets or negotiate the streets of the UK and you think I'm talking through my arse, as I so often do. Tell me I'm wrong, please. BBG Richie on Twitter. I will read out the comments. People do get killed, sadly. There are bastards out there. Men get killed. Men are far more likely to be murdered than women. Far more likely. The official statistics bear that out. Is there a growing threat to women in the UK? I don't know. I've looked high and low, read newspaper stories going back 2, 3, 4 years. There doesn't seem to be any evidence of it. And yet it's everywhere today. And you get crap like that from James O'Brien. Speaking of the politicians pushing it, Stella Creasy, Walthamstow MP, Labour woman. Yeah. She was on Sky News this afternoon with Sarah Hewson, was Stella Creasy. And what can be done about men is the central point here. But first of all, is Creasy happy about the government's proposal to put more street lights on streets and to put undercover officers in pubs? You couldn't make it up. Stella Creasy.
I'm never going to say no to more street lighting, but the challenge with this approach is it presumes that the risk is all about the nighttime economy. We know Sarah Everard wasn't on a night out. Right now, 80% of women report being sexually assaulted and harassed in public spaces, but 90% of those women don't bother reporting it because they think that nothing will change if they do. We simply don't know where the risks are. But we do know, for example, women also report being harassed if they go for a run in a park, that schoolgirls report being harassed on the streets for wearing their school uniform. I had a constituent who was sadly brutally raped and murdered because she went out to buy a pint of milk. That's why we're calling for misogyny to be treated as a hate crime and for the data that you get when you record hate crime to be used. So we have a much better picture and understanding of where women are facing assault, violence and abuse. This isn't about creating any new crimes. It's about understanding where women are being targeted just for being women so that we can better protect them.
So in practical terms, for misogyny to become a hate crime, what would that mean?
This is the question, right? This is the central question here now. What would it mean in practice for misogyny to be given the status of a hate crime, Creasy?
So already a quarter of police forces in this country are treating crimes that are motivated by hatred or hostility towards somebody's sex or gender as a hate crime and recording that data. And where they are, they're finding that they've got better intelligence about the risks that women face. And they're also finding that victim confidence is increasing, so that women are more prepared to come forward and report things. And what they're reporting, frankly, isn't wolf whistling. It's very serious offences like sexual harassment and abuse. And this is also connected to domestic abuse. I mean, it's very sobering to remember that for most women, the danger they face is at home. It's through the intimate relationships that they have. We'd like to go further. The sentencing bill is before Parliament. It's a terrible piece of legislation, but if the government wants to bring forward a sentencing bill, they could implement the recommendations from the Law Commission to bring misogyny into our hate crime framework, so that if somebody was found guilty of being motivated by misogyny when they commit a crime, they would get a tougher sentence. We know that working in that way with other forms of hate crime, religious hatred, for example, or racial hatred, has driven a change in the way in which the police and the CPS deal with people. And it's also driven a wider cultural change as well, where we stop saying, as we did last week, well, women, you need to stay at home and be careful yourself. And we start saying, those people doing this have to stop. It's not acceptable.
Yeah. This is incredibly dangerous, this. And it has serious, serious, serious implications for free speech. And I don't think I have to explain that in any way to you. I think you can understand it. To make misogyny a hate crime, to escalate a crime, to escalate the seriousness of a crime against a woman by claiming that the crime was motivated by the perpetrator's hatred of women. How the feck could you prove that? A guy sexually assaults a woman. He sexually assaults a woman because he's a sexual fiend. He's a predator. How can you prove that he was motivated by his hatred of women? And again, think about I know it's probably the wrong time to make this comment, to make this analogy, to make this analysis, having just mentioned about sexual assault. But think about the implications of putting crimes that you claim to be motivated by hatred of women, putting them on the same level as those motivated by racism, by hatred of blacks or Jews or Muslims or hatred of gays or whatever. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Isn't it? And then we know that it's the victim herself or himself that gets to claim that the crime was motivated by hate. And his or her word is taken as a given. Crazy. And this is going through, well, it's not going through today, but this is intended to go through. Creasy's been on this now for a number of years, along with Jess Phillips and others. And because of time constraints, I'm not going to get into legislating for misogyny and putting it alongside racism and homophobia in its seriousness. I'm not going to get into why it has grave implications for free speech, because you should know that without me telling you anyway. Right? Okay. There's no evidence, is there, that hatred of women or hatred of men, say, is in any way as common as racial or religious hatred, or I should say, there's no evidence that crimes against women can be and have been proven to be motivated by hatred of women. That the motivation at the outset was because of hatred for women. Snatching a handbag from a woman and running away with it, with her pay packet maybe. God be with today's, nobody has pay packets anymore, can be construed as a hate crime if the victim says, well, I believe that this is motivated by misogyny. It's crazy stuff, this, isn't it? I haven't articulated that now as well as I wanted to, but I think it's something we'll look into, and we'll get into more in the coming days and weeks on the program. In the meantime, 13 minutes past 6 o'clock. Before we move on, more music, this time from Blondie. This is Atomic. Blondie and Atomic on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's coming up for 17 minutes past 5 o'clock. Good to be with you this Tuesday. Thanks for being with me. There's some interesting articles on this hate crime and misogyny. And misogyny being added to the list of hate crimes, right? And if you use any search engine, you'll find some really interesting stuff from various legal eagles, for want of a better way of putting it, various academics who work and have worked in law. And most of them, I think, when you go online anyway, most of the articles I've been reading on this, written by men and women who have worked in the law, have dismissed it as fanciful and dangerous. You know, motive, of course, is very important when prosecuting certain crimes. It should be, of course. You know, when you're investigating a murder, first of all, who had the motive to murder the victim? What was the motive there? You know, who had the most to gain? And you begin, I suppose, detectives begin looking at that from the get-go. Well, who gained from the murder of Mr. Black or Mrs. White, kind of a thing? But when it comes to things like assault, sexual assault, rape, whether that's against a man or a woman, it's ridiculous to try and escalate the seriousness of that crime and somehow then increase the sentencing powers of the judge by listening to the victim saying, well, it was motivated by, or I believe that it was motivated by hatred of my characteristic, of my defining characteristic, whatever that is. That's just insane. And a number of people pointed out when this was first mooted last year that this law, if misogyny ever does become a hate crime and it becomes illegal to hate women, saying that a trans woman isn't a woman will be punishable by law. And that's not a joke. I've not just made that up. That's how mental this is. That's the free speech element of it. Right? Anyway, I'd like to get some discussions going on things like that. But the problem I encounter increasingly is that when I reach out to people who are in favour of such folly, people in favour of making misogyny a hate crime, they generally say they don't want to come on, whether they've heard of me or not. No, I don't want to debate it. It's not up for debate, kind of a thing. Anyway, let's move on swiftly. I should have done this a little bit earlier on. It would have made more sense to do this a little bit earlier on. But the Scottish First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, this is of interest to my Scottish listeners, has been speaking today from the Scottish Parliament, talking about the restrictions being lifted in Scotland and in what order hairdressers and garden centres will be allowed to reopen in Scotland from April 5th, said Sturgeon today. People will still have to stay, though, inside their own local authority areas until April 26th, when the travel ban will be lifted within Scotland. It does defy belief, listening to this stuff. It really does, you know. Listening to a politician saying, on this day you will be allowed to do that, and on that day you will be allowed to do this. Here's Sturgeon today.
Now, obviously, we will continue to monitor the impact of these changes. However, I am able to set out now some further changes that we hope to be able to make in early April. I can confirm, firstly, that we expect to lift the current stay-at-home rule on the 2nd of April. Initially, although we hope this will be for no more than 3 weeks, stay at home will be replaced by guidance to stay local. In other words, not to travel outside your own local authority area unless for an essential purpose. People will continue to be able to meet up outdoors, including in private gardens, in groups of no more than 4 from 2 households. Our other changes in early April will take effect from Monday the 5th. On that day, we expect contact sports for 12 to 17-year-olds to resume. We also expect that from 5th April, more students, particularly in further education, will be allowed to return to on-campus learning. Colleges will prioritise those students whose return is essential, including those who are most at risk of not completing their courses. And that includes those who are taking qualifications in construction, engineering, hairdressing, beauty and related courses. We also expect to begin the phased reopening of non-essential retail on the 5th of April. Click and collect retail services will be permitted to reopen from that date, along with homeware stores and car showrooms and forecourts. And garden centres will also be able to reopen on the 5th of April, which I know is important as we head towards the summer period. And last, but for some of us definitely not least, we expect hairdressers and barber salons to reopen for appointments on the 5th of April as well.
Yeah, you'll be allowed, you'll be allowed. Interesting comments from Gerry Hayes. Gerry Hayes is a barrister at law, and he was speaking about lockdowns and tyranny and such like with Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio today. Have a listen to what he says.
This is a real tricky one for the police at the moment. They are in extreme difficulties. Yes. How to enforce a law which really is draconian. And how long is this law on lockdowns going to be on the statute book? Well, I can tell you, it'll be there forever. They won't get rid of it because they say, oh, you know, it could come back in another variant. We have got to do this. That, to my mind, and I'm not one of the anti-mask peoples and one of these people saying lockdown is terrible and it's a disaster. But the fact of the matter is our liberties are slowly draining away. And people are just sleepwalking into it.
Yes.
At the
and people,
it's Mike Graham he's speaking with.
People are accepting it incredibly sort of easily, it seems to me. You know, there are people who say you shouldn't be going out. And I'm going, well, hang on a minute. There's a lot of people who actually are out. I mean, I was out on Saturday doing a bit of shopping down in Sussex. And there was an awful lot of people out and about, an awful lot of people driving around. And in lockdown, it's not really happening anymore, as far as I can see. But I think the problem as well, for demonstrations is that, you know, we have had the right to demonstrate for a very long time in this country. Yeah. And I think they're wrong-headed to try and stop people from doing it. And it seems to me, I mean, I don't know what you think about this. Why can't they have a place to demonstrate where you could go? You know, for example, Parliament Square, if you wanted to demonstrate, cordon off an area so they're not marching up and down the mall, they're not throwing stuff over the fence at Downing Street.
But is Mike Graham smoking crack? Why don't we have an area that we can designate as a protest area? Why should the police, or anybody else for that matter, have the right to tell you where you can and where you can't protest? A huge part of this policing and crime bill, which the Conservative Party is desperate to get into law. Why should anybody tell you where you can and where you can't protest, what time it should start and what time it should finish? Why should people be in a position where they need to apply effectively to the police for permission to take a protest out onto the streets? Crazy stuff. The home of free speech, says Talk Radio. Mike Graham there. The barrister is right. Sleepwalking into tyranny, people. Sleepwalking into it. I see more and more people as I go about my business, and I say this regularly, and I think I'm getting sick of the sound of my own voice, but I say it regularly because I see it increasingly more often. People wearing feckin' masks on the streets. What are you doing? Wearing a mask, walking around in the open air. He's right in saying that. People are all too happy with the state of affairs. Sleepwalking into it, into a situation where you can be told you've got to be vaccinated, you've got to take our medicine if you want to do X or Y or Z. If you don't, you can't do them. Sleepwalking into it. And maybe they're not. Maybe it's worse. Maybe they're not sleepwalking into it. Maybe they're happy with the state of affairs. Yeah, lovely. Yeah, I'll have the vaccine. I'll have the vaccine, thanks. If it means I can go on holiday this year, yeah, give it to me. Happy days. You have an Israeli firm now that says it's got a nasal spray. Do you see this? That it says will kill the virus in the nose, effectively. And it might be an alternative for people who might not want to be vaccinated. But even then, could you really, in good conscience, acquiesce to that and say, all right, then I'll have the nasal spray? No, thanks. I won't have anything. I won't be taking any medicine or any nasal spray or anything. I won't be having a vaccine passport. I'll live with the consequences of it. I think more and more people, at least the people I'm hearing, and I thought Salford was a bit of a rebel town in the northwest, you know, more and more people happy to go along with it. People telling me in the local park, oh, I've had my first jab. Some of these people know what it is I do. Some of them don't. They don't have a clue. Oh, I got my first job delighted. Can't wait for the second one. Really? Do you not hear the concerns about blood clotting and stuff like that? Oh, don't worry about that. No. That's just nonsense. That's just the EU. That's it for Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. I'm back with you tomorrow Wednesday. I am back with you tomorrow Wednesday. It is St. Patrick's Day, but it's not a holiday for me, that. I'll be with you at 5 o'clock. I might have guests. I probably will. I might not. We'll have to wait and see. But until then, thanks for joining me this afternoon. This programme, of course, will begin repeating at 7 o'clock. If you came in on the end of it, on the usual players, it'll be on Podomatic, iTunes, Spotify, and your regular podcast provider, whoever that happens to be. Richie Allen Show, edited, produced, and introduced by myself, Richie Allen, signing off for Tuesday. See you tomorrow, St. Paddy's Day. Might have one or two Irish tunes in the rundown tomorrow. Might too. It'll be the traditional Irish music even. Until then, have a good evening. Bye now.